I'm Laura Green. Welcome to the Sapphic Book Review Podcast, the show that brings you the best in sapphic fiction. Join me as I chat with authors, narrators, and friends who share my love for the genre. You will learn things you didn't know about your favorites and get some suggestions for your next read. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe. Welcome to the Sapphic Book Review Podcast. Today's guest is the creator of one of my biggest Ice Queen crushes. Lola Keeley, welcome and thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Interlude, a short story featuring Victoria and Anna from The Music in the Mirror, has just been released. Why did you decide to revisit these two and what inspired the original novel?
Oh, well, to be honest, I've missed them since first getting to live in their worlds. I spent, obviously, a long time getting that first novel together, planning and plotting and dreaming about it, even being a story. And so the chance to go back to them was just lovely. And my first instinct was to go beyond the book and see what happened once they got to Paris and how their rekindled romance worked. But one comment that readers did come back with was, we really would love to know what happened in between these two points in the book that we don't see directly. And I thought, well, I think since you asked so nicely, you deserve to know. I deserve to know. I want to go and spend some time there. And it was just a nice chance to, I think a lot of us as well, a lot of sapphic people have been through a long distance romance with all its ups and downs. So that was appealing as well. That was nice to revisit. And yeah, the whole thing, I think some people know, I started out as a Supercat fanfic with Kara and Kat, inspiring Anna and Victoria. But then it just grew into, once the book started really diving into the real world of Bali and stuff, it just took on a life of its own. There they are.
Do you think you'll write any more with them?
We did talk about it. I've had a half an idea for a sequel sort of bubbling away for a couple of years. But obviously I've had other commitments and other books on the burner. But yeah, as things are starting to calm down a little bit, I'm sort of looking at my notebooks. You're full of scribbled ideas from 2 a.m. saying, this could work, right? But yeah, something about going to see them in Paris really makes me want to go back, and maybe, even if it wasn't a full-length novel, maybe a novella. I think they've got more story to tell, both of them. So
I think so too. You should definitely get on that.
I will add that to the votes for yes.
I love last year's presidential year homage to the film The American President. What did you love so much about that film? And if the movie had been sapphic, who would have been a good choice to be paired with Annette Bening?
Oh, what a decision. I'm a big Sorkin nerd in general. One of my biggest fandoms was The West Wing. And obviously The American President is kind of a precursor to the whole West Wing universe. I just love that people get to be idealistic. And that I think with the time a lot of us have had politically in the last decade or so, it's kind of nice to go back to a time where I'm not sure it was more respectful, but it certainly looked more respectful and people were a little more decent about things. So it was nice to revisit less aggressive political times. That was quite appealing to go back to all of that. And who would be a match for Annette Bening? There's some fantastic actresses that she's gone up against head-to-heads. I think it might just be nostalgia for The Kids Are All Right, but maybe Julianne Moore? Maybe someone like that? I don't know if she's maybe, it should be quite right for Emily, but just as a pairing of actors, I just think they're fantastic together, chemistry-wise. So we would fudge a few details if Julianne Moore was available.
I will volunteer to do it because Annette Bening.
Yeah, I mean, she's just the pinnacle. You know, she's amazing.
She's so classy, yet, and she can tame Warren Beatty.
Which, let's face it, he's like the ultimate player. So, you know, if you're the one that settles that guy down, then you must be something special, let's face it.
Oh, you know she is. And that film would have been so much better without Michael Douglas, because, you know, he is kind of creepy.
It's a little, you know, I think that's the most I've ever liked him. I think the writing helped him a lot. Wouldn't it have been great? Yeah, we could have had a few, I mean, you think presidential presences, then maybe could we get away with a Kate Blanchett? I mean,
why not?
She's very good at being in charge. So
Sigourney Weaver would have been really good.
Oh, she was so good in that, was it Political Animals, where she played the Secretary of State or something?
Something like that.
It was just like a 6-part drama, but that she was phenomenal in that. So I would also vote for Sigourney in really any circumstances.
Yeah, exactly. What are you working on now, and can you give us a sneak peek?
Oh, well, that's a fun one. I've been a little stuck on a book for a few months, which didn't quite go the way I originally hoped it would, and the story didn't quite come together. So currently sort of working with my editors on that to see what we want to maybe resurrect from it and take in a different direction. So that has cleared me up. My next book that I'm contracted for is based on astronauts and NASA and, you know, the ultimate long distance relationship between Earth and Moon. I'm kidding. They're together. They're on the same planet, I promise. It would be too frustrating otherwise. But yeah, a trainee female astronaut and her older, an age gap, you say? Her older, experienced, world-weary ice queen of a trainer who, you know, has seen and done it all but isn't getting all these fantastic new opportunities of the upcoming generation. So a little bit of worldview clashing, different approaches to life and discipline and how these things should play out. And also just, you know, cool stuff like how do you make out with someone when there's no gravity? So these are the questions that we need to know the answers to. So if we can do that in a romantic setting, then that's all the more fun. So I've been doing a lot of research on that, and the story's starting to come together now. So that'll probably be the next one in the list.
That sounds really good. And make sure you cover how you pee in space.
People always want to know. That seems to be like the second question every time. So it's like, where are they going? The moon? Mars? And then how are they going to pee? And I was like, well, we will find out. We will keep it authentic.
Urination and sex. How does that happen up there? These are the questions I have.
Exactly. All the angles covered.
Which of your characters do you feel the most connection with?
Possibly. I think she's probably the closest I've come to using anything from my own biography, as it were, would be Tess from A Roll in the Hay. I'd love to be a vet. I'm too much of a soft touch. I have lots of cats, but I can't do the tough stuff. I'm too much of a wuss. Although I don't have her career, I did have a similar experience of going off to London for a number of years. We're both from small towns in Scotland. And yeah, just her sort of attitude to life. I think a little bit of her dress sense. I do have an extensive collection of plaid shirts and jeans, which any country vet would be proud of. Yeah, and just the love for our animals and possibly being quite taken by posh women who seem to think they can run all over you and then get another thing coming. So that's probably the one that's closest to me, I think, in real life.
Who's your favourite supporting character from one of your books?
Oh, there's some good ones in there. I think because we've just been talking about music, I've just got Music in the Mirror. I've got such a soft spot for Irina. She's just so unimpeded and she just says what she thinks. And she has seen and done it all. And she just doesn't have patience for mediocrity or anyone who doesn't want to understand what she wants to do. And, you know, she sees things that she wants and she just goes for them. And she's insanely talented as well, but is, you know, has gone through her own problems with injury and addiction and everything else that comes with that. So she just, I think if ever there was a character that was going to jump out and maybe get her own book or get her own story, I think she'd probably be front of the line for me. Well, I'd want to spend some time with her.
Yeah, I would too. I love her.
Excellent. Always good to hear.
No, she's definitely the best. She's just uninhibited, but she's got a softness too that she tries to keep hidden.
The loyalty is there. You can see that when she cares, she really cares, but she pretends otherwise.
Which authors have had the biggest impact on you?
Ooh, that's chopped and changed probably over the years. Prior to really publishing anything myself, probably the biggest authors I read were Paul Auster and Terry Pratchett, which is quite a big span of genres there, from like gritty New York noir to fantasy and comedy and all those things. And probably in trying to find my own voice, I read a lot of Ann Patchett, which is slightly different again. And that's a lot of memoir writing and sort of very literary fiction, a lot of it based in like the art and stuff like that. And she also is living my dream. She runs her own bookshop while writing full time. So that's perfect. And since I've come into sort of sapphic fiction circles, the biggest brilliant thing about it has been the community and the fact that every time you talk to someone, you find out about another great author or another great book. And, you know, Lee Winter, I was very lucky to have Lee as my editor on my first couple of books. And what she taught me that from that was phenomenal. But also just reading her books like Requiem for Mortals is just, that's one of those books we just constantly are, I don't even know where my copy is right now because I'm forever loaning it to people. Like, yeah, no, you have to read this one. I know you don't normally, no, it's not conventional romance, trust me, just read it, whatever their objection is. I'm like, no, but read this one. And also, obviously, at Elva, we have Jay, who is like a living legend of all things sapphic fiction. So I've been so lucky just from talking to them and working with them, but also just, you know, being able to dive into their books. And I think that's really made me appreciate what good romances are like, what a good Ice Queen really jumps off, how she jumps off the page, you know, and just how to do the whole thing from start to finish. It's great to have a scene or half an idea. They really show me the difference between maybe I could do such and such to get it done, you know, get it on the page, get the book finished and get it out there.
And so, you can't really find any better ambassadors for this community.
Of course, they're so involved, they're so helpful, they're so generous with their time. If all authors were like that, you know, we wouldn't have a bad thing to say about anyone, I'm sure. But just in general, it's such a welcoming community that supports each other, whether they write or they edit or they read or they make art that goes on Instagram about the books that they love or make TikTok videos. It's great to see all that enthusiasm and love. There's always an outlet for it.
That's right. How'd you meet your wife and what were your first impressions?
I can make up terrible stories because she can't overhear me at the moment. She's just been painting the hall, actually. So she's covered in green paint. So I should tell people that as a context clue for now. But yeah, we actually met through my best friend who I've known since uni. So she had just finished uni and I had gone off to London. And when I came back to Scotland to visit her, she said, oh, you know, can't be there on the Friday, but I could get one of my friends to meet you off the train. And I was like, need someone to meet me off the train. I know where I'm going. Well, yeah, fine, let it happen. And then that trip ended up being cancelled. But I had the phone number of the friend who was supposed to meet me off the train, who texted me to say, sorry, we didn't meet. And then we started talking on, this is how old we are, MSN Messenger. And shared our live journal URLs. Yeah, so we started talking online for a few months and then eventually organised our first date at an Annie DeFranco concert. And from there on in, that was 20 years ago this June. So that's an insane amount of time.
It is.
well, obviously, at first we were definitely not going to be serious and it wasn't going to be that sort of thing. We weren't going to obviously settle down with someone we met when we were only about 20, but the universe had other plans. So here we are. Quite a few cats, a couple of cities, a few different houses later, and we've just celebrated our 10th wedding anniversary. So all is very happy and lovely on that front, which is nice. And she's just, you know, she's a phenomenal writer in her own right. She writes historical fiction, and she's also just like an insanely talented, rules the world kind of audience and marketing and social media guru. So there is nothing she cannot do when it comes to words and communication. And so that keeps us both busy, I think. And our jobs kind of complement each other when they're quiet, when they're busy. So
happy anniversary.
Thank you for that.
You're from Scotland, where you now live, but you also spent many years in London.
I did.
What do you love about Scotland and what do you miss most about London?
Ooh, what I was most pleased about coming back to Scotland, came back right before the independence referendum in 2014, is how much more progressive it's become here. We still have a way to go. We've got some problems flaring up with, you know, tariffs and other things that we are hopefully going to get sorted soon. But compared to the Scotland that I left at 18, where I didn't feel that I could be out here, I didn't feel that I could have a life here as a gay woman, I just didn't think the country was capable of it or would welcome me. So but I was away in London for about 13, 14 years. So to come back and see that about Scotland was like this huge relief that it had just become so much more progressive about women, about LGBTQ rights, about race and all sorts of things that I used to be really not so open-minded about. Obviously still some pockets that need to be perhaps explained to a little bit better and worked with, but a massive change within my own lifetime, which was great. And the biggest thing I miss about London, I suppose, has to be the theatre. We have great regional theatre here, we have great Scottish productions on a smaller scale, but it's such a luxury to have like 39 West End theatres plus all the smaller ones and the national stuff. And any night of the week, apart from a Sunday, you know, if you can find the money and you can find an empty seat in a theatre, then you can go and see something normally pretty amazing. And I went to see a lot of shows and I worked in the theatre for a long time. So, I mean, you can still go. You can go for the weekend or you can go down and visit people and catch a show while you're there. But it's just not quite the same as being able to say, finish work at 5 and say, hey, should we go and see something tonight? So probably the biggest thing I miss. I miss a little bit the tube and the ease of getting around. I used to be a train driver on the underground, so I still know the network really well. And sometimes when I'm in Edinburgh waiting for a bus that only comes once every 30 minutes in the cold and rain, I'm thinking, oh, it wouldn't be like this in London. You know, I'd be indoors and there'd be a train every 2 minutes and it would be great. But yeah, nostalgia and distance make it seem perhaps a bit better than it was.
We both have quite an appreciation for the many talents of Hannah Waddingham. If you could spend the day with her, what would you do?
Oh, gosh. Well, she's got so many talents. Where would you start? I mean, you know, you've got to get her to sing at some point. That's essential. But apparently she's a little bit funny about karaoke because, you know, that's for the amateurs. And, you know, they don't use the mics properly and they don't look after their voices. So maybe convince her to do a little cabaret, a little open mic sort of situation to round out the day. But I'd love to go and see a show with her. Her enthusiasm for theatre and for other performers is just contagious, and I'm sure it would just be like a highlight to be in her company when she was enjoying something like that, and you'd enjoy it twice as much by association. I think we were just talking before we started recording how her big break in the West End in A Beautiful Game, that was around about the time I arrived in London, so I've always kept an eye on her career as we've been coming up through. So it's lovely to see her having all this success and everyone going, oh my God, she's amazing. Because we know she's great. And the more people that get to know it, the better, I think. She seems like a great person to just talk through things with, like just have a chat over like, a nice long lunch with a couple of glasses of wine and nobody's in a hurry. Pick a restaurant with like gorgeous views out over the Thames, because we're going to do it in London, apparently. You know, just get all the insight and gossip and what it's like to do the jobs that she does. And, maybe try and talk her into playing Victoria when we inevitably, when I force someone to try and adapt the Music in the Mirror for TV. Maybe she would like a nice leading role. A couple of people suggested her as a likely Victoria. And although she wasn't who I had in mind at first, I think she could probably make a part like that her own. I think she'd be a phenomenal ice queen. So
oh, yeah.
We could definitely talk her into... If she didn't fancy that part, I would just get the list of books out that we could adapt and just be like, come on, who would you like to play? Tell us who you want to be. Maybe get her to read Truth and Measure, or, yeah, I'm sure she could turn her hand to anything. So we'd make it a fun day out with maybe a potential working partnership in the future.
And I feel like you could actually talk to her very well. I would just stare at her and be like, you're so pretty. Can I touch your arms?
Yeah, oh, they really are a work of art. You know. Yeah,
I'd be like, I just want to climb you like a tree. Is that okay? That'd be all right.
Just gives that vibe. I think as well, the one thing I've got in my favor is I'm just, every time I do see her being all statuesque and gorgeous and impressive and amazing, I think the theater kid always shines through as well. And I'm like, I know you. You know, we're all theater dorks on some level. Once we've worked in the West End for a while, we always carry that with us. So I think that helps. And she just seems like an approachable person. So I hope she's every bit as lovely as she seems. But Hannah, if you want to have lunch, let's find out. It's great. Just call me.
Exactly. I'll fly over and maybe invite Brett Goldstein, because I think he would be a lot of fun to hang out with.
He seems so hilarious too. His comedy is just top notch. So let's make a little lunch.
The more the merrier. Yet I would also like a little time alone with Hannah. Maybe see if things could happen.
Just,
you know what,
you know,
I mean?
Allow situations to develop. That's,
exactly.
Know.
She's on my list, top five, and it's a pass. I could do whatever I want.
Exactly. If you've got your whole pass and you've got it laminated, these are the rules.
Exactly. As a child, what did little Lola want to be?
Oh, she was a troublemaker.
I can see that about you.
I wanted to do all kinds of random things. I was asking my parents about this not long ago because I couldn't remember what my first career path was going to be. And according to my mum, I don't know how true this is, I wanted to be a doctor, but only if I could be a doctor who could fly.
Oh, okay.
Which seems like a very specific restriction on my medical career, I have to say.
But yet also quite convenient, because you could get to where you needed to be faster.
Exactly. I'd be a very useful doctor because, I'd be held up by things like traffic or buildings. But then, when would you rest? You have to think about these things. And yeah, I had a brief spell of wanting to be a ballerina, which I think is inevitable. I went to a lot of dance classes when I was very young, and I desperately wanted to be a ballerina, but I didn't like doing ballet. So
okay, well, that's going to be...
It was a bit of a sticking point in the end, but I did like other forms of dance, or I was better at other forms of dance, I should say. So those were my two main early dreams, and I think I always knew I wanted to talk to people or tell people stories one way or another. So I think the writer thing was kind of inevitable, even if I didn't know about it right away.
Those are good ones. I wanted to be an actress and a teacher, but I also wanted to be a checkout girl at the grocery store.
That looked like fun.
Because, they had the candy right there next to them. And as a child.
You assume that was their candy,
That's right. I did. I thought maybe they could just get all the candy.
See, access. Listen, kids have got great logic sometimes. We shouldn't always be so quick to stop thinking that.
Tell me two things about you that would come as a surprise.
Oh, what would come as a surprise? I think anyone who doesn't know me outside of my books, like who doesn't maybe follow me on social media or whatever, would probably be surprised by how rabid of a football fan I am. And that's soccer fan, not the American kind, I'm afraid. My wife is actually from the same part of the world, but my dad's family are all from Liverpool or surrounding area. So I'm a big Liverpool fan. And I think a lot of people are kind of surprised because, I don't know, I think they think if you like things like ballet and theatre and whatever, that there's not a lot of crossover with football fans. I haven't found that to be the case in my own life. I found a lot of my friends do like both to the same degree, but some people always like, oh, just, you're like a football fan. Like you don't just say that you like the team, like you actually watch the games and you get mad at other fans. And I'm like, yeah, I'm in it for the drama, you know? So that sometimes surprises people if they haven't come across that side of me directly. They're like, whoa, tell that little lady to stop swearing at the TV and stop starting arguments over sport. Yeah, that's probably one of them. Ooh, second surprising fact. I should have thought about this in more depth. I don't think I am a terribly surprising person sometimes because I'm quite an open book. It might surprise people who think I'm quite chatty and quite confident that on the very few times I've had to actually perform on stage, like actually act, I have terrible, terrible stage fright.
Hmm.
And I'm okay talking as myself. If you ask me to give a speech or be on a panel about books, that's fine. A wee bit nervous, but I can do it. But weirdly, if I have to pretend to be someone else, as much as I love actors and acting and theatre, I can't do it. I just go just total shutdown. And I think a lot of actors would tell you the other way around. If as long as they can be someone else, that's fine. But they hate talking as themselves. I seem to be a little bit back to front.
So you just must be comfortable with yourself.
Hopefully that's what it is.
Hopefully.
I'm not too confident for my own good. But I think it's just one of those things where I'm like, yes, I know I have to do this. And I was nicely asked to do it. So I have to just go and talk as myself. And I don't know, maybe the acting thing feels optional. So my little brain just says, no, too scary. Don't do that. There we go. Hopefully that's vaguely surprising in either way.
What are your three favourite sapphic books?
Oof, there's an ever-changing rotation, I have to say. Every time I pick up a new one, I think, God, how did you do that? At the moment, one I read recently was Something Different by Quinn Ivins.
Mm-hmm.
And not to just pick home players from Ulva, but I love twin stories. I grew up on Sweet Valley High books. So to finally have like a sapphic version of Twin Swap. And it's just brilliant to have. And what I love about Quinn's stories as well, especially this one being set in academia, is like they're really true to the world that they come from. Like you can actually see these university people all arguing with each other, and it's not conveniently glamorous in a way that you think, yeah, lecturers don't have that kind of money, you know. It's all very true to life, but still keeps the romantic fantasy that you can find the perfect person and then get all swept up. And so that's probably one of the more recent ones I read that I just thought, yay. I know we mentioned it in passing earlier, but Requiem for Mortals by Lee Winter is just an all-timer. It's unusual, it's well written, it's just such compelling characters. When you realize that the lead character is an assassin and you close the book, just maybe pause and think, you actually can almost kind of feel the presence of that character Requiem behind you. And I always think that's, you know, a great test for a book if you find yourself a little bit uneasy just at the thought of, you know, what if they were in the room right now? Okay. And that's just, you know, it's a brilliant thing to be able to achieve as a writer with any character. And one that I stumbled across on my Goodreads the other day, I just realised I think about it a lot, is Just for Show by Jay. And that is one of my all-time favourite tropes, the fake relationship. And it's just, it's one of the, again, it's there's so much work goes into making it realistic. And making it a situation that you think, well, this could actually happen because, you know, people really want to protect their careers and they don't want to be embarrassed in front of their ex who really hurt them. So, of course, they're going to fake a relationship to save face and to be this wonderful, successful person who has it all, because don't we all want to look like that? Yeah. Especially when your whole family's going to judge you and all your friends and all your colleagues. So, yeah, I think that's a great one. And the way that two such different characters fall for each other, and they totally resist it as well. They totally don't want to be a cliche. And then it's just, they're so inevitable and you know it's going to happen and you're still cheering for them every step of the way. Those are ones that I would go back to and pick up and just start reading again without a second thought, and that I know the story and the character just stayed with me no matter how long it's been since I last picked it up. So those would probably be three of my all-timers.
Very good. I've always wanted to have my own fake relationship.
Wouldn't it be fun, right?
It would be so much fun.
I just think it'd be great. And just, you know, having to do, I love the, when they have to really, really quickly trade secrets so that it looks plausible that they know each other, and you know, you think they're about to blow it completely, and then one of them steps up and really just makes it convincing. I'm a sucker for it. I really am.
Well, Lola, thanks so much for joining me today. It was a pleasure meeting you, and I wish you all the best.
Oh, thanks so much. It's been great chatting. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening, and thanks again to Lola Keeley for joining me. To purchase Lola's books, visit ilva-publishing.com, or you can purchase them on Amazon. To support this podcast, you can buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/sapphiclaura. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, happy reading.